Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And a great Tuesday to you. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Lincoln, Kia, Hyundai. Great new inventory. Fabulous new inventory. The best. Pre-owned inventory. Maybe that fits your budget. Well, they got a great selection and the Sunbury Motors guarantee behind it. They go over all those vehicles. Fabulous service department, from the complicated to obviously the all-important routine maintenance. And a great time to buy. The holidays, a great time to buy a vehicle. Ooh, the deals are there. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia. Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Santa, of course, with us this evening. It was difficult last night on the phone explaining to the suit that you had to be between the ages of 4 and 8.
Yeah, that's always the toughest conversation to have every year with him.
Yet, he finds an angle.
And he has more of an angle now.
Why is that?
Because he's second in command.
Oh, that's true. I mean, he is the guy that actually can fire the dude. So when you look at the suit, right? Remember, who can fire Santa? And think of that with the disdain that I think of it as. Like, what do you fire Santa? What's wrong with you, man? You can't do that. Yeah, don't tell me you're all powerful. What the heck? Oh, my God. That's when you know somebody's power hungry. Don't you think?
Of course.
When you can bag Santa. You can't bag Santa.
Total violation.
You can't do it. You can't do it.
You'll get called for that one.
I'll lead the charge. I'll lead the charge, brother. All right, so let's start with your Eagles.
Where would you like to start?
I just wanted to start with your Eagles. I figured at this point you were capable of taking it from there.
Well, I guess a couple of things. One, once again, you can't have it both ways with the quarterbacks. And apparently Jalen Hurts was supposed to get all this playing time, and then he never got it. And apparently Jeff Lurie's trying to make the call, but I guess maybe not, because Hurts played, I think, only 3 snaps last night. But it's just the same things over and over again. Miles Sanders, 8 touches total last night, 6 carries. He's got to learn to catch the football, but that's a different story.
Right.
So that's one thing. You only roll out Carson Wentz one time after you've said 2 weeks ago you want to try and get him rolling out more.
Yeah.
The offensive line is embarrassing. And the defense actually played one of their better games last night. But yet it goes for nothing because the offense can move the ball. They don't get a first down until late in the half when they actually got a touchdown. They had -4 yards in the first quarter. I really thought today would have been the day that there would have been some firings from Jeff Lurie, considering how his behavior seems to have been through these reports we're seeing. But we didn't see it today. And I kind of questioned that a little bit. Because guess what? You can probably still win this division, even if you make a coaching change.
You want people... So here we are at the holidays, and you're firing people?
That's the way it is.
At the holidays.
That's the way the business is.
You're looking at the Peterson family, and you're hanging them out to dry because of your own personal animus.
Listen, he gave the Eagles the Super Bowl. He'll always be revered for that, but it's time to move on. And it's not just Peterson. Howie needs to be fired, too. But again, when you get as bad as you are after winning a Super Bowl only 3 years ago, it goes from the top up. So once again, as I said last week, Lurie's got to look at himself in the mirror.
Yeah. So you want him fired?
Yes, I want him and Howie done, gone.
Despite the fact that you'd be putting them on the breadline.
I mean, I don't know if we got that far. Doug got a pretty good contract and extension after he won the Super Bowl.
Buck Shaw. You know who Buck Shaw is?
I probably should, but I don't.
The last Eagles coach to win an NFL championship.
There you go. Okay. So that would have been
Buck Shaw, 1960.
Yeah.
Buck Shaw. You want to, and then, you know, they got rid of him for Joe Q. Herrick.
Yeah, that didn't go over well.
Now who do you want to get rid of him for? Charlie Weiss?
No. I told you who I want for my next coach. Eric Bieniemy from Kansas City.
Okay.
And as far as the front office goes, that's going to be a little more tricky. But I would look at teams like the Chiefs again. You know, like the Steelers, the Raiders, like teams that have drafted well, know how to draft well, know how to build organizations. I mean, for me, I try to steal from Kansas City if I can. Because if I'm Jeff Lurie, I got some connections there with Andy Reid still there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where I look for at this point.
So you're firing people. That's it.
You're done. Yeah.
You're firing people. People are canned. That's it.
Now, as far as the quarterback goes, as I said before, you want to put in Hurts there. It really is not going to. It's probably going to make matters worse, honestly. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he's ready. I don't think he's going to be a good quarterback in this league. I really don't. And it's nothing against him. It's just. I just don't see it. But even so, Carson Wentz, actually, while he still wasn't far from perfect last night, when it was crunch time, when the team really needed something to be made, you go back to the last drive before the half when they got the touchdown. He was great on that drive. The opening drive of the second half when they got the field goal, mm-hmm. He was good on that drive. So I think that was one of his... I guess better games, if you want to say it. It's pretty sad, and that just shows you where the season's been. But he wasn't all that terrible last night. And the pick he threw was more on Dallas Goedert, because apparently Goedert ran the wrong route. Now, of course, you got people still not on the same page in Week 12, which again goes back to the head coach. So Wentz was not the problem this time. It was the coach. Once again.
Well, I think you know what the biggest problem, in all seriousness, all kidding aside. Let's start with this. Let's talk about the biggest strength last night. The biggest strength last night was the defensive line. But the defensive line, because look, in terms of the game, the way it played out, Seattle really did dominate the game, but they didn't get anywhere in dominating the game. And that defensive front, I thought, played pretty darn well last night. I give them a lot of credit for that. The next part is the biggest weakness is not Carson Wentz. It's the offensive line. You know, Lane Johnson was trying to play before hurt. That doesn't help. All right. Peters is unfortunately way past his prime. I mean, way past his prime.
And it was revealed that he played with a broken toe. He's playing with a broken toe.
Yeah, but he's way past his prime.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
He just is. So what's happening now is you've got a quarterback that's playing behind this group right now. Okay, they're playing behind them. So there's X amount of seconds a quarterback has in there, and they're so conditioned to X amount of seconds where they reach a comfort level and plays can develop. He doesn't have the comfort level because of his offensive lines, and plays can't fully develop because of that offensive line. They're just not playing well up front right now. I'm not saying he's not making some bad decisions. Sure he is. I'm not telling you he's not making some bad plays. Yes, he is. But I also think he's rushed in making plays. And he's rushed in making plays, which then plays with you mentally because you think you have less time to make plays because your group up front is not that good. I mean, look, the Seattle defense is not a world beater. Yet they were putting pressure on him left and right last night. Did he make some bad decisions? Sure. But he doesn't have time, the kind of time that normally a quarterback would have. He doesn't quite have because that group up front is not good enough to give him the proper amount of time to develop plays. And he doesn't have receivers that bail him out. Make a tough catch. Make a tough play. He doesn't have that. Again, am I saying he's playing a perfect game? Absolutely not. Wentz is also part of the problem. But to label him as the problem and then don't do something thoroughly ridiculous and replace him with Jalen Hurts, that's ridiculous. Hey, that's just making a change to make a change. That doesn't do anything for the organization.
And stop bringing him in and out as well.
Well, it depends on what you want to do with him.
What they were trying to do last night is not what you want to do. If you want to have a separate package, all right, whatever. I still don't like it, but whatever. That's fine. But that drive, when he came in, he had the two plays in a row. He had the completion to Alshon Jeffrey. Was third and short. Carson Wentz comes back in. He gets sacked.
Right.
That's what can't happen.
Well, I mean, whose fault's that?
That's the coach.
No, it's the offensive line's fault.
Well, that too, yes.
I mean, look, this is for some reason, and this is the part I don't get, and I'm not being critical of you. I don't quite get that when people talk about games, okay? I don't quite get why people don't discuss execution. I don't understand why people don't talk about, okay, he comes back in, bad play call, he got sacked. He got sacked because the offensive line did a lousy job. Okay? It wasn't executed right. Hey, that's the reason. If it's protected and Wentz blows it and throws it away somewhere, okay, then that's on Wentz's fault. Right? Sometimes there's a play call, you sit back and say, oh, why? Oh, you know, you've been running the ball down the field, run, now I'm going to throw it. Don't have to show me the smartest person there. Keep running the ball. Or conversely, I'm moving, throwing, now I'm going to mix in a run. I'm going to surprise him. No. Execution means so much. The offensive line in that play didn't execute. Thus, the play call ends up being a failure.
While you are right about that, Steve, I think the perspective I'm bringing with this is...
You want everybody fired.
Well, I mean, ultimately, yes. But the point is, okay, so we take that drive back for an example where...
The first step to healing is recognizing the problem.
I've already recognized that I'm a maniac when it comes to this team. That's been long.
But execution, okay, the like last night, all right, or stupidity. All right, let's get to two plays Malik Jackson made early in the game.
Yes.
Why are you pushing DJ Metcalf from behind?
Absolutely.
Right, why are you ripping off, now you got away with one, why are you ripping off somebody's helmet? You ripped off Ayupati's helmet. Now how the officials missed that, I have no idea. Yeah, play smart.
Yes.
Don't hand people gifts. Hey, that's not the coach.
And there's been a lot of offside penalties too, and that exactly on the players. No doubt about that.
Okay. It's like, do you think they teach offsides?
Exactly. But my point is, you still have to put your players in the right situation to execute perfectly. And that is, and that reference where I'm talking about with the quarterbacks, that's not an example. To not give Miles Sanders the ball more than 10 times is an example. To only roll out Carson Wentz one time when you said you're going to help him out is another example. And the third example is this. Is there's another, because the Eagles won the Super Bowl, guys that are on that team, there's a loyalty problem. Jason Peters is one of them.
And I've talked about that.
Yeah.
I've talked about that before where, you know what, you win, and you know what's really hard? And this is where the Patriots, for the most part, have been pretty good. You get sentimental about people. You know, we won. He's a big reason why we won, you know. And you fail to recognize that maybe that was as good as it's going to get with that player. But you get sentimental about it because they delivered something you wanted your whole life. So you get sentimental about it. That's one thing you can't accuse Belichick of. He's not sentimental. All right. So,
I think that's pretty clear.
We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Great to have you with us on this Tuesday. Neil Coulong still to come on this show, talking about Wednesday football, the lead-in to the lighting of the Christmas tree at Rockefeller Center. Never thought I'd be saying those words. Never thought I'd be thinking that I'd be doing a Penn State basketball game that was competing with a Steelers game on a Wednesday. Never thought I'd say those words. News is next. I knew I'd say those words.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Lincoln, Kia, Hyundai, great new inventory. Fabulous pre-owned inventory, too. Yeah, maybe what fits your budget, maybe it's what you prefer, but they have a great selection of pre-owned inventory, and it comes with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Devin Ford was, get the James Franklin material here, which Matt worked so hard to get. Devin Ford, I can tell you, was all set to go, and then a family emergency and could not go. And James talked about that and how it occurred.
And then with COVID, yeah, it does. It magnifies it. You know, if it's not COVID, a guy can go home and, you know, come back, you know, if they're willing and able to based on family circumstances, and you can throw them right back in there. But with COVID, it makes it challenging. You know, with Devin, you know, him and his family made that decision, which we were totally supportive of. I actually talked to his dad and his stepmom you know, maybe Sunday night it maybe was. And it was obviously important for Devin to be able to come home, and he was able to do that last week, and he was back for practice on Sunday. So Devin is available, but you know, whenever we're dealing with, you know, any type of family emergency and situation like that, you know, we're always going to just be as supportive as we possibly can on the family and what their needs are and what the players' needs are, even you know, during a season like this.
And that's the right thing to do. Like I said, James Franklin runs. There are ways to run a sports team. One of them is you can run it like a business. And there are certain places that run it like a business. You know, but, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, zero. That's just the style of the coach, the style of the school, it's the style of the program. All right. I mean, it's the way it is. And then you run it like a family. That doesn't mean you're not running some of it like a business, obviously, but you run it like a family. And that's how James Franklin prefers to do it, run it like a family. So, yeah, you got a game coming up. He can potentially help you. And his need in the moment comes first. It was a family decision. So that's why Devin wasn't available, because Devin was on the travel list, by the way. He was on the travel list. And when Greg Kincaid brought it into the booth, you know, I knew he was going to be. But then, of course, I'm looking at them, watching them warm up, and it was Keziah Holmes, Kevon Lee, and Joe Bruno. And no Devin Ford. And Greg came in and said, Ford's not there, is he? He says, nah. He quickly explained what the deal was. And went from there. So that's why Devin wasn't there. Now let's get to the bizarre call of the week. Never have encountered this. Batted ball and a 10-yard penalty on top of it. I've seen a batted ball before, but not with the 10-yard penalty. So James was asked about that play.
I saw some highly qualified people all over the country saying that that was not ruled correctly. You know, I have gotten an interpretation from the Big Ten, but I usually have a conversation as well. And I'm still, you know, waiting to get clarification and understanding of that call, because it's been interpreted very inconsistently. And to me, you know, the way the rule reads to me is if it's questionable, you don't call it. That's how the rule, I literally read the rule myself, and most of the interpretations I have seen said you don't make that call. I also saw a clip in the Oregon game that was clearly a tip and was not called. And I know that's a different conference and all those types of things, but you know, we got a guy on our campus who's an official that works our practices, and I asked him and got his opinion, and most of the opinions that I've gotten have aligned with the way I see it, but I want to make sure that I'm crystal clear.
Yeah, that's probably Todd he was talking to. It is, this is the way I looked at it, and I may be completely wrong about this, obviously, because, I mean, I'm not sure, so I'm just going to take this from a common sense point of view. He fumbles the ball, okay, now it's loose, and I understand the thought process of calling a penalty on a batted ball. But to me, the thought process in the batted ball is you're batting it forward to gain an advantage in yardage, not batting it to save it from going out of bounds so you can recover it. So this is where, as I'm watching it and watching the replay with Jack, I'm trying to put two and two together here. And he bats it sideways or perpendicular from where he's diving, or even slightly backwards. So he's not trying to gain a yardage advantage. In other words, this is not the holy roller play of the Raiders beating the Chargers in San Diego when Dave Kasper finally recovered it in the end zone in the last play of the game. That's what you're trying to avoid here. That's not this play. So because he batted it perpendicular from how he's diving, in other words, to the field, perpendicular to the sideline, or even slightly back, it doesn't matter, it's both in the same neighborhood, he's not trying to bat it forward. He's just trying to save it from going out of bounds because it's a loose ball. I thought the worst possible conclusion for Penn State in that play would be they would call it dead at that spot. Michigan would have the ball, but they'd have the loss to go with it because he did fumble the ball. The last thing I expected was a 10-yard penalty from the line of scrimmage. Not even from the spot of the bat. It was a 10-yard penalty from the line of scrimmage. So, I mean, how far back was he on the play when he made the play? 12 yards back? 13? So it ends up being a 23-yard penalty against Penn State for hustling. So, and I still, and I, you know, I know he probably talked to Todd. He may have talked to Chris too, but I don't. Normally, I'm pretty good. When somebody calls me about rules, and oh, I forgot the name, the woman that called in the Ohio State game about the helmet being pulled off of Sean Clifford, and she was absolutely right. Now, Tyreek Smith is falling back, and he reaches and grabs Sean's helmet. It's still a face mask call. You can't do that. You can't touch the helmet to begin with, especially the quarterback. You can't touch it. And he pulled the helmet off completely, and there's no call. And she was absolutely right about that. Absolutely right. So I can tell you right now that usually, because I track rules. You know, I get an email every year, here are the new rules, this is what you're watching for. And I usually will sit down, and when they bring officials in to work a scrimmage, and I'm talking about the Big Ten officials. I mean, I'll talk to the local officials when they're out there, obviously. But I'll talk to the Big Ten officials. Why, you know, I'll tell you, a great guy to talk to is Jerry McGinn. Jerry's an excellent official. And I like talking to Jerry because Jerry will really lay out for you, okay, Steve, okay, this is what we're looking for on crackback blocks and why. And it'll be a point of emphasis. I'll say, well, Jerry, what are the other points of emphasis I need to be watching for as I broadcast the game? And Jerry will go through it for me. And if I have a question, now, I have not called Bill Carollo about this. I figure this will be one James can talk to him about. But I can call Bill Carollo anytime, and he's always gotten back to me. I do not know what the interpretation of this is and why. And I'm not, I mean, it's an unusual circumstance, so I'm not going to sit here and criticize Larry Smith and the crew that's out there because I don't know if my analysis would be right. I'm trying to tell you what I think is a common sense approach to the play. Now, a common sense approach doesn't mean that that's the letter of the law. But to me, common sense is you're hustling. You bat the ball back, and then you go from there. I'll take a break. Back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Terrible scene last night as the suit nudged some kids out of the way so he could get in line for Santa. It's just, I just don't think it's a positive look, do you? I mean, I understand being anxious, but...
Yeah, not at all.
I thought you had to be 4 to 8. I didn't think you had to be 48.
He must have got the numbers mixed up. No, it's 4 through 8, not 4, 8. Details.
I have concerns. All right. So, yeah, the batted ball thing, I don't know. I was trying to take it from a common sense point of view, but I have to admit, I had never encountered that one before. And usually, 9 times out of 10, you know, I'm doing the broadcast, I got a pretty good handle on what the rules are. You know, unusual stuff, things like that. Because I try to keep up with it because I think it's my job to. And what are the points of emphasis? I always talk to basketball officials all the time. What's the point of emphasis this year? I talk to Big Ten officials. What's the point of emphasis this year? That way I know what I'm looking for from them. But that one, I said, as I said yesterday, the bizarre part of that play, and this is the really bizarre part. I put down a series of boxes. On this side, it's everything on a play you can do wrong. And on this side, it's everything on the play you can do right. Michigan on that play checked every box of everything you can do wrong in that play. Conversely, Penn State checked every box as to what you do right on the play, including the hustle. And Michigan got 10 yards of the first down from the line of scrimmage. I don't quite know where the common sense is in that one. I mean, it very well may be the absolute correct ruling. It absolutely may be. But it sure did feel like a bizarre outcome, considering one team did everything wrong and the other team did everything right. Well, I thought the worst outcome they could have in the play was there would be a dead ball at that spot and Michigan would still have the ball. You know, at that spot. Hey, you fouled up. You fumbled the ball. It was going out of bounds. He tried to save it. Batted ball. No penalty. It's your ball dead right there. It's not Penn State's ball. Okay. Right? It's going to be fourth down and 23 because I think it was a third down play. It's going to be fourth down and 23. You're going to punt. You're going to get the ball back. Okay. You know, it's too bad they didn't get the turnover, but hey, they're going to get the ball back and the loss. But not only did they not get the ball back, not only did it get the fourth down, it got the first down, and they got a 10-yard gain out of it from the line of scrimmage. Oh, my goodness. It's just, wow. And again, you can laugh about it because it had no bearing, zero, on the outcome of the game. None. No bearing on it. It's an interesting play to talk about, though. It's a very interesting play to talk about. Because there's so many moving parts to that play that you don't see. I mean, Shaka's doing, like, Shaka sees the ball loose, so Shaka can't grab it. So he reaches out, extends himself, bats the ball. Now, in my book, he's getting an A for that play because he's hustling his brains out to get to the play. And Oway's there, and Ellis Brooks is there, and you're like, wow. When they assessed the 10-yard penalty, Jack and I looked at it and said, a 10-yard penalty. And of course, James was James was not exactly enamored with it on the sideline either, obviously. But it's interesting, here we are Tuesday, and we don't have any, I still have no idea right now what that call is. I don't know. College basketball today, Texas beat Indiana 66-44. That's at the Camping World Maui Invitational in Asheville, North Carolina. Again, sentences I never thought I'd say. The Camping World Maui Invitational in Asheville, North Carolina. Okay. North Carolina is playing Stanford at 4. Let's see. Also, St. Francis of Pennsylvania, Robbie Krimmel's team. State College Area High School's Rob Krimmel. They play Virginia. Virginia coming off that loss to San Francisco. Green Bay is at Wisconsin. Omaha goes crosstown to play Creighton. Villanova is in Bubbleville. And the Mohegan Sun taking on the Hartford Hawks, Johnny Gall's team. Oklahoma State Marquette in the Big East Big 12 battle. And in the State Farm Champions Classic, this should be a good one tonight, 7:30 on ESPN. Duke plays Michigan State, and the other half of the doubleheader there will be Kansas against Kentucky. And the other game tonight is Baylor against South Florida. So a lot of college basketball tonight. There's no pro football tonight. The Wednesday game of the week will have the Steelers against the Ravens at 3:40. Which, okay, here's something interesting. The Rockefeller Center Christmas tree lighting, 2018, drew 6.9 million viewers. That's good. Last year, it drew 7.26 million viewers. Out of all of this with the Steelers playing at 3:40 against the Ravens tomorrow, I wonder if the Rockefeller Christmas tree lighting, with that kind of lead-in, draws over 10 million viewers. Especially if the game is good. I think it's going to be interesting to see what the lead-in means to the Christmas tree lighting. No, it's not as exciting as 2 years ago. I mean, the Rockefeller tree lighting 2 years ago was actually legitimately exciting. Why? Because a tree down the street from me was the one selected for it. Like, hey, they're taking that tree. All right, great. Ohio State has resumed activity. Ryan Day, though, will not coach against Michigan State. So he's still out. But Ohio State is back practicing today, getting ready for Michigan State. The question is, will Michigan be able to play them? If Michigan can't, Ohio State will fall short by one game of the six-game minimum to play in the Big Ten championship game in Indianapolis. Finally, Harbaugh would get some semblance of revenge.
I'm being half facetious when I ask this question, but I wonder how much they're going to consider that. You know what? We can beat Ohio State by not having to play them.
Well, first of all, you have to be direct with the league as to what you can and can't do. If they find out later that you could have played, I would think the fines would be very, very high. They would not be small. Now, Ryan Day's not going to coach this week against Michigan State, but it looks like they're on track to play. But what if Michigan can't play next week and they fall short? Wow. By the way, Sarah Fuller is going to be the place kicker again this week for Vanderbilt. Neil Kulong next half hour.